Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to remind viewers that entertainment is not mindless.
Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 137, with guests from Real World Theology, Scott Kelly. Also, first-time guest from Redeeming Culture, Ryan Earnhardt. So listen up, because we've got a really swashbuckling show for you. On this episode, we talk Dead Men Tell No Tales and the allure of the pirate life.
I feel silly. Because I didn't even realize that Redeeming Culture was a thing. Well, that's such a crazy question, or a crazy statement, because that makes it sound like I didn't realize that Redeeming Culture wasn't a thing, when obviously I do, because look at the podcast. pat ourselves on the back.
Somewhere that changed, yes. Yeah. In the course of time.
But I feel like I just stumbled upon Redeeming Culture, and you and David, and... how long have you guys been doing your thing?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say there was a hard open to it. And he even gives me credit for it, which I think is very generous of him, because he pretty much started himself. But back in the Wild West days of Facebook, I had made this page with the idea that there was no topic that you couldn't tie back to the gospel somehow. And so it was almost like a challenge page where people would try and come up with a topic that I couldn't tie back to the Bible somehow. And after a while, people got angry about different things. I'm like, well, that's not the point of this. This is just, you know, like a fun exercise for me. Yeah. But it's the internet. It gets trolls. And I was like, okay, you want to troll? Fine, I won't do it anymore. So I just let it die, kind of a thing. And he just really said he took that to heart and he loved that idea. And so then he created it. I'm thinking it's at least 2 years old, because we've had a couple of anniversaries, I think, already with it. So at least 2 years old. And we try and see, we're not as focused as you guys. And I think... That's part of our strength weakness. You know, we're not all focused on just movies. We might bring up a comic book or a video game, or just it really encompasses anything in culture. So whatever is up for grabs that week, month, whatever is on our heart, we'll go for it. We'll take a shot at it, kind of a deal. Whether that's a podcast, an article, or what have you.
So. No, that's good. I would wonder if you were still doing your kind of come at me bro style of plugging things back into either the would you try to do it specifically to the gospel or the Bible in general, or like the
it was kind of like I'd show the steps. I'd be like, okay, so this is how you tie it into the Bible, and I'd be like, and then from here you can get to the gospel. You know, it was like I didn't always do it step by step by step, but it was like, okay, you got close enough here, so you can take any conversation anybody, you know, brings at you, and you can lead it to a gospel conversation. There's no topic you can't do that with. And it was kind of part of this project I was on in college as well, where they'd encourage us to get into conversations with people we hadn't met before, you know, just kind of street ministry, just... Do you know if that person is saved? No, I don't. Well, go find out and just get into those conversations. And so, you know, whether that's them carrying a, you know, motorcycle helmet and you're asking them what happens if that helmet doesn't, you know, save your life, what's going to happen to you? Or, you know, somebody's got a cool tattoo, or they, you know, are reading a Back to the Future comic book, or, you know, whatever it is, meeting them where they are and trying to steer it as smoothly as possible into that, not just, hey, by the way, you're going to go to hell if you don't know what I'm going to tell you right now and you make the right decision about it.
Speaking of Marty McFly, you know that the best life vest you can really wear is Jesus Christ.
Hey, there you go. See? You know? See?
And they're like, wow, exactly. Tell me more about Jesus Christ, the ultimate life vest. Seen the Coast Guard too.
Yeah.
Well, so that's great because, I mean, obviously that is something that we try to do. I feel like I've asked you lots of questions and I don't want to neglect the fact that Scott, you were here too. So
no, that's all right.
You just
to hear more about what he's doing.
Yeah. So, I think that again, if you were to still do that, it seems to me like at least at first, because of its popularity and, you know, how many people go to see it and quote it and, you know, have the Blu-rays now of the original and stuff, that the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise is one of those things that I assume someone would challenge you with. They would say, come on, this is just a silly, fun movie about pirates. This has nothing to do with Jesus and I want to correct myself really, because I know someone when I made distinctive differences between the Bible and the gospel, as if the gospel wasn't really the narrative that's running through the whole Bible. So anyone out there who is really upset about that, I understand. I correct myself. that this is one of those films. It's kind of like when I talk about reviewing Transformers or the Fast and the Furious. They're like, this is just fun. It's a popcorn movie. Johnny Depp acting weird. This has nothing to do with the Bible. I think, like I said, this is one of those examples that they would have come at you with. Have you had to
just take your brain out and enjoy it, man?
Yeah. Like, it's just entertainment. Like, can't you just turn your brain off? And, you know.
Yeah, having too open of a mind and it'll fall out, you know, that's always a problem.
Zing! Zing. So have you had someone come up to you specifically and talk about any of the Pirates movies before in this way?
Not personally, no. I mean, with David, we'll talk about any movie or franchise or whatever, but outside of that, no.
Yeah,
no.
But that's just dumb old David. No one cares about having conversations with him.
Hopefully not. They'd be all listening to our podcast if they did.
Well, so I guess this is great because this gets to be kind of like the first time case study. And I'm kind of curious. We have not had a chance because of the release times and how long Real World Theology has been in existence. Had a chance to talk about any of the pirate films. And I want to definitely shout out to Blaine, who over on Rewind just did a Rewind episode on the first one. So if anyone's interested in a focused episode on the first episode, go check out that in the podcast feed. I think you'll really enjoy it. I know Blaine had a lot of fun with his wife Shannon recording that one. So again, check that one out whenever you get a chance. But I know I haven't, and we haven't had the chance to spend a full episode on any of them. So I'm kind of curious about some of the broader questions before we jump into any kind of specific conversation about Dead Men Tell No Tales. And when I was thinking about, like, what is that opening question? Like, what is the root question that I'm kind of curious about that I'm hoping Ryan and Scott can help me with? And I couldn't figure out a better way to ask this. And maybe, Scott, you can help me first, since me and Ryan have been, you know,
dominating the conversation.
We've been yucking it up. We'll say we've been yucking it up. Scott, why are pirates so cool?
Why are pirates so cool? Well, they're not.
They're
not. Historically, they're not really something to be admired, right? You know, you're out on the open water for all time. You got, like, I don't know how many different kinds of diseases, you know, you can't go on land or else you're going to go to the hangman's noose, you know, but I think there's a sense of freedom and adventure that is there that people attach onto, you know, being away from these lawful lands and sailing on uncharted waters. You know, I think that's something that everyone wants. If you look at, if you look at like the video game industry for example, and you see all these open world games that promise all these areas that you can explore, and you'll be the first one to, like, you know, go in this cave or see this star or something like that. You know, it's like we love that. We love that sense of adventure, that, you know, on uncharted waters type thing. And I guess in the case of Pirates of the Caribbean, they have another aspect to it that I think people really latched onto. And I think it has to do with another topic that has been very prominent in our culture lately, superhero movies. Okay. So I was thinking about this earlier today. Superheroes, you know, they do what they want in order to save the world or the city or whatever, and they're free to do so. You know, we don't see them getting locked up in prison for destroying cities. They get commended. They get a medal as long as they, you know, killed or otherwise stopped the bad guy, right? And what we have in Pirates of the Caribbean, they're essentially superhero pirates, right? But they've come across treasure that can give them these superpowers, such as invincibility, all right? But the difference between, I guess, Pirates of the Caribbean and I suppose the Avengers is it comes at a severe cost, this treasure, these superpowers that they get. What superheroes, you know, call powers, the pirates, they call curses, right? So, yeah, I'm invincible. I can't die. I can live forever. But we don't have anything to live for. You know, we're dead inside. We're, you know, it's this really cool, I guess, flip on the whole superpower thing. And I think that speaks more to our humanity than, I guess, from what I've seen of the superhero genre, if we're continuing on with that parallel. I'll toss that to you guys then. I know I just talked a whole bunch there, but what do you think?
Well, let me follow up with this question, Scott. Like, do you tend to like pirate shows or movies in general? Like, when someone advertises a movie about pirates, or hey, when you were going to go see the first Pirates movie, were you jazzed to see the first pirate movies because it had pirates in it, or because it had like Johnny Depp, or because anything? Like, is there a draw there at all for you?
You know, it was really interesting. I think I was the first one of my family to see that trailer when that came out. And I was excited. It wasn't because of Johnny Depp. I didn't even know who Johnny Depp was at that point. You know, I look at Pirates of the Caribbean as being kind of like what Pulp Fiction was to John Travolta. You know, it brought Depp's career back. So I really wasn't in for him. I knew Orlando Bloom from Lord of the Rings, but his character in Lord of the Rings wasn't even like near being like my favorite character, you know, and I guess Keira Knightley, I knew her from Antoine Fuqua's King Arthur. I forget, huh? You know what? I take that back. I think Black Pearl came out before King Arthur. If that's the case, I didn't know who Keira Knightley was either. So I didn't really go in for any of that actors or actresses. I went in just because the trailers look cool. I mean, just these big ships, you know, the cannons flying everywhere. We got swashbuckling. I'm big into sword fighting, right? I classically fenced for 12, 13 years. Like, I'm really big into sword fighting. I love that stuff. So if a movie's going to give me a swashbuckling, I'm going to be there, you know, regardless if it's pirates or not. But yeah, it just looked cool. It was something different. You know, we didn't have a Pirates movie coming out, an original pirate-centric movie since Cutthroat Island. That was out in 1995. If you don't count Muppet Treasure Island, which I think came out a year after that. But
which
it
definitely should.
Yes.
Muppet Treasure Island is amazing. One. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should just do a podcast on that. But I think Pirates of the Caribbean filled a gap that the studios didn't know folks wanted to be filled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by putting in the supernatural type stuff and even some horror aspects, I think they succeed in bringing like a large audience in just with all these things that they threw in there and made it work, you know? So, yeah, it just looked cool.
So what I'm hearing you say, and again, you're welcome to correct me, is that you are technically drawn to pirate-themed things, but only because you know that like there's probably like a 98% chance there will be some type of swashbuckles. Like, buckles will be swashed, and you will be excited about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember how much sword fighting they showed in the trailer, but I'm sure it was there. So, yeah,
sucker.
I guess so.
Yeah, like
I guess so.
Got me. Yeah, it appealed to you. So Ryan, it's the same thing. Like, is there something? Actually, let me ask it a different way. I know that you've obviously seen the pirate films, you wouldn't be here if you hadn't. But I'm kind of curious, in a similar vein, like what was drawing you to the Curse of the Black Pearl, at least? What was drawing you to the first one? Is there anything particular about pirates? And has there been anything since that you're like, you know, I think I enjoy stories about pirates, I'm going to seek more out? Or is it, or do you mainly just keep your pirate-centric entertainment to the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise?
Well, I'm always open to new good entertainment. So if anyone else is going to pitch a good pirate-centric movie, I'm all for it. But I think I was pretty much with Scott on the first one. They did a really good job of advertising. They had a really good trailer. There was some mystery to it. There was some humor, you could tell. And that soundtrack is just like the perfect pirate theme. Like, it's a great soundtrack.
My goodness, yes.
And what really, I mean, the movie was great. They did so many things right that they've been trying to do right since then. But yeah, I loved Muppet Treasure Island. I loved the first Pirates movie. And I just like good movies. I don't think I'm just a fanboy for fanboy's sake. I'm too picky, I think, for that. But I think the draw of pirates, I mean, everyone loves a map, like a treasure map. Like, I follow these steps and I get a reward. And, you know, just that completionist getting loot kind of a thing. You were talking about video games a little bit, Scott. And I think that's one of the big things. It's like, I go to this place not many people maybe have even ventured to, since the first person either died with that loot or left it there to, you know, keep it difficult for someone to get. You know, they were going to save it for later. The bank was busy that day or something like that. But yeah, there's potential, obviously, in any pirate movie or any pirate book or story or, you know, whatever media you have. But execution is key for sure. I won't just go to something just because it has a pirate splashed on it.
Well, so then I feel like the only pirate file here, because I didn't realize I liked pirates so much until I think I saw Black Pearl. Because after that, I felt like I was, I mean, I felt like a lot of us were suckers for pirate themed things, because Disney was able to get us to come back for Pirates 2, 3, and 4. And well, I'd say specifically they were able to get us to come back for 3, and then amazingly, miraculously, we still came back for 4, or at least most people did.
So obligated, enough people maybe, did. But,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, at that point, so I felt like I was a sucker for this stuff, and so much so that if someone told me that they were telling a good story about pirates, then I was going to at least check it out. I remember a couple years ago, I want to say probably 2014. I'd have to check for sure. But I remember NBC had a show on called Crossbones. It had John Malkovich. I was like, Pirates, John Malkovich? And I think, I want to say maybe it was Neil Cross? Somebody, I think, I'm probably misremembering his name, but one of the guys that was involved with making Luther on the BBC was trying to make a show for NBC. And I was like, all these things sound amazing. I'm going to watch the show. And it was not very good. And I was like surprised at how not interesting it was. And yet we still watched it, cause I was like, it could get good at any moment because pirates, right?
Because pirates. Yeah.
But fortunately for my free time, it was canceled, so we could watch way better things. And then I had a friend, kind of go, mentioned to me, say like, hey, have you seen Black Sails? And I'm like, well, I tried to watch this other pirate thing, and and that's exactly what the conversation sounded like, because I couldn't really muster words to utter my disappointment in Crossbones. And so I watched the first season, and I was like, I felt like it was one of the same things. I was like, I love the idea that it's about pirates, and it's not terrible. And then season two came around, and I think season two of Black Sails is everything that I could possibly want from a pirate themed thing. And also, I want to make sure that I'm very clear on this, that it probably couldn't be much further away from what the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise is. And It's so much so away from that, that if you're listening to this now and you think you should definitely go out and watch Black Sails, I want to say, well, a little bit of a timeout. A lot of early Black Sails is definitely Starz trying to capitalize on like the Game of Thrones shock kind of gratuitousness in all areas. So it is not for people of all sensibilities. So I just want to make sure I said that. Outside of that, especially once it gets later and it becomes more about the characters and the allure of the pirate life and preserving the way of the pirate, I was 100% enthralled, and I'm thinking, this is actually getting me excited to watch a fifth Pirates movie, a fifth Pirates of the Caribbean movie, even though, again, I know it's going to be different. And I know I've been like 3 and 4 were very, very hard to get through. And I kind of was like, why, what is it about pirates that speaks to me personally? And I actually really like what you were saying, Scott. And I usually don't try to be so on the nose about this, but oftentimes, we hear that one of the biggest problems with our lives in relationship to how we interact with the creator of the universe is that either he can be the captain of the ship or we can be the captain of the ship. And I think there is a romanticism about exactly what you, like I said, exactly what you were saying, Scott, like this idea that you're free, you're away from places where there's law and regulation and people telling you, like, struggling for power. You're just on the open sea, living life, creating your own rules. You never know what the next day brings. There is, like I said, I think there's a romanticized view of what that freedom is. And it honestly creates this struggle between this romanticized view of freedom and what kind of responsibility in real life looks like. And I think you can easily equate that back to the struggle that we have as Christians on a daily basis. And I hate putting it so on the nose, but I think that's kind of why I like pirate stuff so much, because one of the things that I like is the romanticized idea that if I had my way and I was living by my own moral code, that my life would be more fulfilling, more interesting, more fun. And I don't need rules. So maybe that's admitting too much. And maybe now I'm going to get made fun of by Gene at some point.
All are.
Yeah, it's going to happen. but like I said, this idea that we all ultimately want, like, one of the biggest things that keeps us from God is the fact that we want to be in control. Like, we want to say what is best for us. We want to say this is the way things should have worked out. And we want freedom. And honestly, if you follow that far enough down, you'll get into what I think our current culture thinks. And it's the way that we're able to romanticize this time period when most of our pirate things are set. You see very few pirate movies about like Ethiopian pirates, because that's not very romantic. You know, it's not far enough away and distant in memory for us to romanticize it. So when we can romanticize it, we see it as an expression of our desire to be individuals and to be free from rules. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna tie that into something Jack Sparrow said in the first movie, Curse of the Black Pearl. He said, you know, wherever we want to go, we go, when he's talking to Elizabeth, I think on the island that they were stranded on. And he says, that's what a ship is, you know, it's not just a keel and a hull and sails. That's what a ship needs, but it's not what a ship is. What the Black Pearl really is freedom. So we have these ships that are basically the pirate ships are symbolizing freedom. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is all these ships, you know, they all look different from each other. You know, every pirate wants something different from the next. Every pirate is, you know, every pirate captain is representing a different idea. Mm-hmm. And so the, you know, these ships are basically these metaphors with sails, you know, like it's just, I don't know, like if you look at the British ships, for example, you know, those just look the same, you know, from ship to ship, even though the Interceptor in the first movie was apparently the fastest mm-hmm. ship on the sea until, you know, the Black Pearl showed up. But yeah, it was it's just this idea that these ships basically are freedom and you can just steer it wherever you want to go. You know, that is very appealing to people.
Well, I think we get a little bit of that in, you know, Jack Sparrow continuing that idea in Dead Men Tell No Tales, because I'm pretty sure it was in the trailer as well. But one of those quippy lines was Karina saying, like, I'm not looking for trouble, and Jack kind of mumbles like, what a horrible way to live, kind of. Just that whole idea that there's, you know, they're trying to follow the rules isn't even fun, you know, like pirate's life for me. But outside of romanticizing pirates and obviously my obsession with watching things pirate themed, I think we've all kind of touched on the idea that there was a lot right in the first Pirates movie. And again, in depth, if you would like to hear more about that, I would go listen to the episode, the Real World Rewind episode with Blaine and Shannon. But just because I have you guys here, I'm kind of curious some of your, you know, your general thoughts. Like, what was it about Curse of the Black Pearl that really did it for you? Like, what made that a great, a fun, whatever adjective you want to use? What made it so great, Ryan?
Well, it was a combination of things. Like I said, the soundtrack was amazing. That just, it made you feel like there was cannons nearby, like there was billowing wind, like there was a swell of the sea. It was just a great, great soundtrack. Second was the dialogue. The banter that they wrote was so sharp. Like, it was like a sword fight with words half the time. It was amazing. And anytime there was like long exposition or something like that, they always built it up and then they let the air out of it right at the end. And it was brilliant. Like, that whole just set up, like, oh, and then, but where are all the survivors? You know, like, who's telling the tales at the end? Or, you know, oh, and then it was at the end that we found out we needed his blood, so maybe we shouldn't have sunk him at the bottom of the ocean. Like, anytime they had big, serious exposition, they just let the air out of it again. And then, like, the lawyer aspect of the pirates, you know, always looking for word loopholes and things like that. Like, just everything they did, plus the visuals were solid, you know, and you know, the acting was good and all that kind of stuff. Good action. But I think the banter and the soundtrack was the main parts. Like, those were solid with the exposition writing in there. Mm-hmm. I think those were the keys that they haven't quite recreated. They've done stunts again. They've done some, you know, funny lines and stuff like that. But they haven't really nailed those three things together, I don't think.
And I would agree with all of that. Scott, how about you? Is there anything else that made it stand out for you?
Oh, I think he really hit it on the head there. I mean, the action, I remember seeing it the first time in theaters, it just took my breath away, especially the ship-to-ship battle with the Black Pearl versus the Interceptor. And the way that music was just tying that whole scene together. Like, I rewatched Black Pearl not too long ago before Dead Men Tell No Tales. And, man, like, every time that scene comes up, like, I just want to jump through the screen and start, you know, swashing some buckles on the deck with the with the rest of them, you know. One of the other things I really liked about it, and that they continued to do for better or worse through the sequels, was they, you know, I mentioned that they had horror aspects in the film, you know, like the skeletons and that really good scene of Barbossa coming into the moonlight and, you know, popping the bottle of wine and drinking it, and, you know, just looked like blood going down his bones and everything. Like, that was just cool. But they also had a lot of fantasy aspects as well. I know a lot of folks didn't really care for Dead Man's Chest. And a lot of folks really didn't like At World's End, but, you know, when Dead Man's Chest brought in the Kraken, like, oh man, I love monster movies. I'll just get that out of the way here. And like, that was, oh man, the Kraken scenes were amazing. And they had that a lot in, Black Pearl too, you know, like the skeletons walking on the, you know, at the bottom of the ocean and yeah, it was just really cool how they were able to merge all these different genres into one. And again, did I mention the rousing music? You know, the music was just perfect.
Mm-hmm. So I think that all of us probably have the Black Pearl, Curse of the Black Pearl, rated very highly because of all these things that I 100% agree with that you guys are saying. The one thing I would add is that I just thought in general the story was more compelling, because I guess I didn't know what to expect from the characters.
Mm-hmm. It was more contained as well. It wasn't, you know, trying to be as vast as the oceans that they were sailing on. You know, it was a lot more contained. And when they were like, oh, this made a lot of money, we can really start to world build now. Yeah, it got a little out of control, but yeah. Well, yeah, it's very contained.
Yeah, I think with any franchise, the same thing happened with this one that happens with lots of them. The first movie is actually very specifically about a couple personal character arcs. You know, mm-hmm. like this is about Will Turner, and we're interested in seeing what happens to him. We're interested in seeing because he comes across a kooky pirate named Jack Sparrow. We're interested because he has this budding romance with Elizabeth Swann. You know, we're like, what's going to work out? Like, where did he come from? It's almost like a mystery. We really care. Like, again, we really care what's happening to him. And it's kind of like a really interesting character story set in the backdrop of a cool mythical pirate world. And I think the other ones kind of flipped the script and were like, let's make characters that aren't quite as deep and tell you more about this wacky world. So it's interesting, but it's not personal. Because every decision that every character makes in Curse of the Black Pearl seems to have more weight, because you care so much about each individual character. Whereas in later films, I'm like, do I care about this person at all? Do what happened? Like, and you know, and Jack, Captain Jack becomes more almost villainous in later films. Maybe I'm going too far with that, but like he is a trickster in the first one. But he ultimately is like making the right decision. For only, I think, marginally personal gain. Whereas in later films, it's basically all about him just doing whatever he wants, being super selfish. And he kind of like, he ends up being like a comic relief, goofing himself into helping any protagonist along, if he's not the protagonist. Am I the only one there with that one?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you on the Jack Sparrow evolution of his character. He was best in Black Pearl, because even though he came off as like really dim-witted and goofy and everything, he always seemed to be like 8 or 9 steps ahead of everyone else. Mm-hmm. He always had a plan. And then the later editions, it just seemed like he was just ad-libbing. He was just making it up as he went along. And then, you know, I actually don't even remember much of the fourth movie. I guess I need to watch it again. But whenever you make what was originally a side character the main character, I don't know how many examples I've seen that actually works. He just got way too goofy. And you know, he was not the lead of Black Pearl, contrary to what a lot of people will probably
say. Posters would depict.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was very much Will and Elizabeth. And, you know, I think I would argue that the character moments that we have in Dead Man's Chest and At World's End, especially with Will and Elizabeth, I think those are very solid. I remember watching Dead Man's Chest for the first time, and when that ending happened, I was really not expecting them to get that dark. You know, mm-hmm. I knew Jack would come back, but I was like, man, this is like Empire Strikes Back-esque. You know, he like lost the lead, and they got to go, you know, get him out of Carbonite, or I mean the Kraken, and, you know, you have to get him back somehow. But I was not expecting the ending of that. And then, you know, Elizabeth was the one that turned him over to the Kraken. So I thought that was pretty good. And I guess I'm a sucker for happy endings, which is why I think I liked Dead Men Tell No Tales. Man, that's a long subtitle. Can
right?
Maybe we can talk about that later. Yeah.
DMTNT.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when I first wrote my review, I put DTMNT. I was like, oh, Dead Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. No, that's not right. I really liked how, you know, spoilers, it was, you know, it really turned out good for them. I remember really liking how they got married in like this big sword fight on the ship, you know, and in the third one. And I don't know, I just really liked their arc. I know the third movie was really bloated, I don't know. I really liked the character stuff. And again, I'm not speaking to the fourth movie. I remember not liking it much. So,
well, I believe that there's a video. Now, if I can find it again, I will put it in the show notes. But it kind of, I think it's a Screen Junkies. And if it's not, I apologize to whoever really did it. You'll get credit when I put it in the show notes. There's a video that kind of like goes, hey, there's been a lot of Pirates movies. Can you not remember what happened? Let's sum it up for you. And I'm watching this video of a summation. And I think I put it in the Real World discussion group, maybe too, of like what happens in the all the Pirates movies leading up to Dead Men Tell No Tales, or DMTNT, if you will. And I was like, I don't remember any of this, you know. Like, I remember like little parts of Dead Man's Chest, because that's number two, right? I remember a little bit of Dead Man's Chest, but like three, four, especially five, I just was like, I know I went to see these movies. I don't remember any of this. And not only that, but I only had to watch a video of someone describing the main plot points in the video. They even joke about how they're skipping huge chunks of what happens. And I was getting incredibly bored watching the video and confused just trying to have someone else explain and probably as succinct and well as anyone could way possible. And I was like, man, I really don't need to revisit these movies. So when, you know, Scott, you're saying, oh, I need to watch number four again. I would argue that maybe you don't. Like, I would watch this video. I'll find this video. I'll find the link. I'll put it there and just be like, oh, yep, definitely. I'm good.
It saved me like 2 hours and
it will
change.
I mean,
these are all like super long movies too.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And that's the thing. So watching it, watching the video will feel like you're watching a 2 hour movie. Cause I was sitting there like, oh my gosh, they're only on like number four. They've still got two more movies to describe to me. And like I said, and it's very, very quick. So with all that, like we, in various ways, the three of us, you know, I know I specifically asked about the first one, but in various ways, we've kind of already hit on our feelings about all the ones in the middle, all the ones between the first one and Dead Men Tell No Tales. I'm curious, like, really, and so, like, Ryan, I'm curious, like, why would you go see Dead Men Tell No Tales after you had seen, like, 3, 4, and 5? Like, why are you coming back to this? Well, because you said you were interested in good stories, or you're interested in, you know, good movies done mm-hmm. well, and you've just seen 3, 4, and 5 to prove that the trajectory can't be that good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's what things like Rotten Tomatoes and pre-screened trailers and reviews are for. I heard that this one wasn't as bad as the previous ones.
which is always a ringing endorsement, right?
Yes, yes. And, I mean, as someone who's involved with Redeeming Culture and now Real World Theology a little bit, it was like, well, I've got to talk about it, so I better go see it.
That's the excuse I'm using for seeing Transformers in a couple weeks. I
won't even do that. Nope.
Well, I'm like, hey, this movie's going to make more money worldwide than probably almost any other movie that comes out this year.
It's going to get a lot of eyeballs.
So
it's going to have a lot of ears.
Guess I got to see it.
And you're going to contribute to that.
That's right. Yeah. Maybe that's what it is. Everyone just assumes it's going to make lots of money. You know, it's like the chicken or the egg thing. Like, uh-huh. Is it making lots of money because we all feel like we need to see it? Or vice versa.
Yeah. Ooh, that's deep.
So Ryan.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oh, there's. I am the problem. I am the problem. Oh. So you're saying you're just bought in. You heard things that say, hey, it's not going to be that bad. And ultimately, you are a martyr for the cause of Redeeming Culture, and that's why you're seeing this. Like, did you actually have any hopes that it would be really good?
No, I didn't. Okay. My wife calls me a pessimist. I call myself a realist, and
that's the
I
exact
set my
same
expectations
yeah.
just where I expect reality to hit. Yeah. I'm not trying to be hopeful or be pessimistic about it. I'm like, it is going to not make me regret the decision. Like, I'm not going to be like, okay, I need my money back right now kind of a deal. But it's not going to be something that I'm going to go out and be like, you all have to see this now. I knew it was going to fall within those, parameters. It's like, okay, good, but, you know, not going to raise the roof about it.
So then as a teaser for later questions, do you regret having seen it?
No.
Okay. And we'll come back to that. So Scott, same thing, you know, like even you can't even remember what happened in 4. You know, you've seen it. You definitely can't remember what happened in 5. Was 5 even a movie? Was there even is this a fifth movie? Who knows? I don't know. I can't even keep count anymore. Like, where are we at? Why are you going to see this movie? Where are your hopes at? Why do you keep coming back to this well when you honestly can't remember what happened before it?
Well, when you put it that way, I don't have an excuse. No. The only thing I really remember plot-wise from the fourth one was that those ships ended up in bottles somehow. And I was like, all right, well, is it like going to be another? How are they going to get those bottles out? So I guess I got that answer for me in the fifth one. But no, I went to go see it because the trailers. Trailers came out. It looked like kind of dark, brooding, almost Dead Man's Chest type mood. And I was like, you know what? Maybe it can bring it back. Maybe they found something. Maybe they learned the mistakes from 4. I know it's Disney. I have not been on good terms with Disney for a bit, but I'll give it a chance. I'll give it a chance. And oh, here's another trailer. This one has Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley in it. I guess they're bringing them back too. So I'll admit, I think the Dead Men, I'm just going to call it Dead Men because I don't feel like saying the whole thing. It relied a lot on nostalgia of the first 3 to bring in the audiences because the fourth one just didn't perform so well. So I think that by bringing in these other characters that a lot of people, especially in, I guess, the younger generation, grew up with, the fifth movie it looked like a sense of completion almost. We weren't really promised that it was going to be an ending, but it's like, oh, Will and Elizabeth are in this, you know, Jack's there too. I got Will's son, who last we saw was like a little kid, you know. So, yeah, maybe we'll get a happy ending. It'll be wrapped up and this will be it. This will be the final one, maybe, hopefully. And, I guess, you know, like I said, I'm a sucker for, I guess, swashbuckling movies, and I like happy endings, and I left the theater after this one really liking it. I was really happy that I saw it. I'm not saying it doesn't have problems. It does. It has quite a bit of them, and we're not going to have time to even touch on half of them in this podcast, I'm sure. But I really liked it. It was fun. It had the same amount of fun that, you know, Dead Man's Chest had. I just had a lot of fun with it. I went in fearing the worst, and I guess I wasn't too realist, maybe. I was able to suspend my disbelief enough that I didn't come out a crabby mess, no pun intended. So, yeah, haha. So, throw it back to you.
Well, so I think it's a good point all around, because you know, this movie has only been out for a couple weeks, and we are really, really close to halfway through the year. And whether it was going to be good or bad, whether people are seeing it for nostalgic reasons. Actually, I didn't see a trailer that had Orlando Bloom or Keira Knightley in it. So I was actually pretty surprised they showed up in the film. And I definitely wasn't going to see it for that reason. But lots of people have come out. Maybe I read the same things, Ryan. I saw some of the early reviews that said, you know, hey, it's not terrible, you know, and I was like, oh, okay. And for some reason that was a ringing endorsement for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so like whatever the reason, Pirates of the Caribbean, again, only out a couple weeks. Actually, I think it's exactly a couple weeks, like 2 weeks maybe, or a little right over 2 weeks. Is now number 11 on the year for total gross. Now, you know, it might not be climbing a ton after this, but, you know, being right at the edge of the top 10 for a movie franchise that has, you know, not really sparked a lot of enthusiasm, I think that's pretty good. And I think, you know, same thing. Obviously, a lot of people are going to go see this. A lot of people have seen this already. People will probably continue to see this because it's the kind of movie that, you know, people end up taking the going to see after it's, you know, they're not like, I've got to see this like the first week it comes out. So I'm interested to see how well it is overall. And I'm actually not even sure what my reasoning for going to see it in the first place was. I think maybe it was... probably what you were mentioning, Ryan, and what I mentioned as well, which is people were saying that it might be good. Mm-hmm. And I guess I want so desperately to see a Pirates movie that is good that I was willing to give it a shot. And then I heard it wasn't really that great. And then I was like, I guess maybe I won't see it. And then I was like, well, most of the other things that have come around now are not very good, or they're good and no one saw it. And then I'm stuck in that little podcast conundrum I often find myself in. But For whatever our reasons were, for as similar or differing as they were, and for the reasons that people are going to see this movie, we have. It's done. And now I am more directly curious, like, what are we taking away from this film? Scott, you're saying that you were surprised at how much you enjoyed it. Ryan, you're saying that, hey, it was, you know, it was what I thought it was. What is it doing that's positive, or that's maybe, well, especially with you, Scott, like, what is it that was resonating with you? I mean, was there anything there thematically? Was it just a popcorn film? Was it just cool to see the Salazar ship open up like with a rib cage, or was it just special effects? Was there something there in the story that connected with you?
Well, it definitely wasn't just special effects, but that ship opening up was pretty cool. But honestly, I was watching, I was like, you know, I think this is the last thing that you can do with a ship. I think they've done everything else you can do with a ship. I think this is it. But I guess a lot of audiences that go in, you know, everyone's taking something different away from this movie, away from the series as a whole, and I think with this one, you know, they go in, like I said, maybe it was for a sense of completion, and they got that, you know, they got that happy ending with Will and Elizabeth. The curses, apparently all the curses of the Seven Seas are broken at the end of this one. That's interesting that that happened. I'm not really sure why a trident would do that, but okay, you know, I'll buy it. We'll go with it. if Disney wants to start this series up again with their new leads like Karina and Henry, they can try, but I don't think they're going to succeed. Mm-mm. Because I think the story has pretty much been told. What people care about this stuff, like it's been done, it's been told. We've seen enough of Jack. My favorite character is now out, you know, Barbossa, but that brings me back to what I took away from it personally that really resonated with me. And, you know, dare I say, I almost got emotional in the theater with this one. All right. It's very stupid sounding, but Barbossa's sacrifice. I was very blown away by this. I mean, we already have, like, you know, the plot of this movie is a woman of science, nonetheless. You know, she's searching the heavens for her father that she hasn't met yet, and the father's found and then gives his life so everyone else on the ship can live, especially his, you know, spoiler alert again, daughter, and all the curses of the seven seas are lifted. I mean, I know I'm oversimplifying this a bit, but man, from a Christian's perspective, that was quite powerful for me. And it was something I was not expecting to see in a fifth installment of a Disney franchise. Like I was taken aback by that. And Barbossa being my favorite character, I think I like that a bit more than others, just because I've always thought that he's like the really true pirate of the bunch, you know? And it was really cool to see his arc come to a completion, and along with other characters. And I guess I just wasn't expecting this movie to do that. I just thought, oh, everyone's going to be safe again, and they're just going to set it up for another one and, you know, go on and on. And it'll never die. And, you know, because Disney swallowed one of the medallions. So they, yeah, from the first one. But no, I was very shocked that this movie had those kind of themes in there. And yeah, I guess I'll throw it back to you. I think I've said all I can really say on that.
No, that's good. That is, like, at first when you're describing that, I'm like, man, Scott is Jesus juking us really hard in this.
No, I know.
But I mean, I think
I oversimplified it.
But I think it works. I mean, like, that's way more like at the heart of things. I think you just did Ryan's job for him when someone tries to troll him about this movie on the internet.
I'm sorry.
No.
Well, I mean, so it's very similar. And if I can take one piece of that, I would say that the Pirates franchise as a whole is about daddy issues.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to really focus on daddy issues. I mean, like, Will Turner, daddy issues, obvious, especially when you get to three. Is it three or is it two?
It's two. It doesn't, bootstrap.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because they all blend together. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Look at me hating on the Pirates franchise. you know, Henry Turner obviously has issues. Elizabeth obviously has issues. Like, and then we get all the way to this new one. Like, we have Karina, who, based on what you just pointed out, Scott, at the end of the film, she obviously has daddy issues. I'm gonna make it sound like it's like such a childish thing. It's not, like, the serious, like, things that, like, are eating away at people, like wanting to know their fathers or having situations where they're separated or estranged from their fathers, or being estranged fathers themselves. Heck, even Salazar, was it Salazar? Am I saying his name right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even Salazar, in his very forced backstory cutscene, points out that one of the reasons that he went and murdered or hunted down and killed pirates was because pirates killed his dad and his brother. I believe it was his brother, mm-hmm. too. So he's doing it because of things related to his father and not knowing his father and his father being taken from him. And while I can't say for me personally, even though as someone who doesn't have the relationship with his dad that I would love to have, historically, that I feel like I would be open to this affecting me. It didn't. And I think it's because everything was so forced. Everything seemed very, very on the nose. There was like not an ounce of subtlety to the daddy issues, or the, just the father estrangement issues. We never learned about Henry, like, as a person, really.
That's fair.
You know, like, if we would have learned about him and then been like, oh, I can see how not having his dad there has really affected him and would cause him to want to, you know, go and seek out Will. Instead, it's just like, oh, yeah, my life goal is to find my father. Like,
well, I mean, that first scene, sorry, I'm interjecting.
That first scene
where Henry, as a boy, you know, ties a, what was it, a rock or something?
Yeah, ties
rocks to his feet. Like, he was ready to kill himself to find his dad.
Yeah.
You know, he knew how, he had an idea of, like, where his ship would be, but he took quite a, you know, a leap of faith, I guess you would say, a dive of faith to find him. And even more faith that, you know, the ship would come back up, you know, so he could get oxygen again, you know. It's like, so this kid almost killed himself to find his dad, you know. It's like, that's something there. But again, yeah, that's one thing about his past. But yeah, I would agree. I think we could have stood to see a little bit more of that.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I see what this film does, I think, is... Oh, and this may get me in trouble with some people, but it does something that I really don't like, that I can't say this in a non-snooty way, but people who don't actually look at the whole of narrative in film, they do a lot. This tends to be something that your pastor will do on Sunday morning, or especially youth pastors. They're like, hey, what's a good clip from a movie that I can show? And mm-hmm. Take that out of the movie, out of the context, and use it for a sermon illustration. And while I do think there is merit in doing that, it's one of my least favorite things, because I feel like if you can completely take one scene out and show it for like 30 seconds and it backs up your point, there's a good chance that one of two things is happening. Either you're commandeering that scene for your own purposes, which might not actually be what the scene is intending to do in the larger scheme of the movie, or you're simplifying something, or it's so simple already that it's really, I feel like it doesn't have near the impact it could if we really understood the full story. To me, it's the sermon illustration equivalent of like cherry picking Bible verses.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, we don't like it when people take the Bible out of context. So yeah. I don't think we should be taking other people's, you know, well, stories out of context. Yeah. But anyways. Yeah.
But no, but so with that, then what we have is a whole bunch of really, really ready-made scenes for people to use as like sermon illustrations, or, you know, like speaking illustrations, because you can set that up really easy. Like, I imagined while I was watching it, someone showing, or right after I'd watched it, technically, young Henry, just like you described, he basically was fighting death, willing to risk his life for the chance to meet his father. And I can just see, like, you know, a teary-eyed youth pastor saying, look what this young boy would do, just a chance to meet his father. He's ready to, you know, give his life away just for a chance, just a glimpse. And I'm like, oh, the bad sermon illustrations are melting my brain. And the thing that I think frustrates me is that there's a lot of truth to it, because... if there's one thing that I have realized over the past, after becoming a father myself, and even just being a husband, it's that a father's influence in your life is important. Like, mm-hmm. like, I do things to try to impress my dad that I would not do to try to impress anybody else. And usually I have no idea why I do it. I think we are hardwired to want the love and approval of our fathers. And I think if this movie was more subtle, then it could be incredibly poignant about that fact. And I think I'm disappointed because it's so on the nose that it almost seems silly.
This was the fifth movie of an installment, though. I mean, see, I don't know. Maybe we're asking a bit much of it, but I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. So I realized that as a movie, I wanted it to do more. I think it's easy to pull ideas out of it, but it's hard for me to see that they did it very well. But I could be wrong. Ryan, I want to know what you think. Like, was this dad thing in the forefront to you, or did you see something completely different?
No, definitely. I mean, it is based around fathers and relationships to their kids. It's just, like you said, Scott, 90% of the people who are going to go see this are people who have seen the other one because they're nostalgic for the first one. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you have all that nostalgia, why do you have to be so blunt with your interactions? You know, it's like there's a lot of history there that people can draw on themselves because they've already seen other parts of the narrative. But even then, like, certain parts of it were like too skimpy at the same time. It's like, we barely did we get two lines out of Orlando Bloom that whole movie? Like, I don't know that he did have two lines. It was like, I'm stuck here and there's no way around it. Just don't see Jack. Bye. And I don't even remember him saying anything when he met up with Elizabeth. Like, that killed me. Well, we'll get to that later. But
he said all he needed to say.
He said all he needed to say, I suppose. But yeah, it was up in your face. I mean, she was looking for her father. He was, you know, setting off the movie looking for his father. And like you said, everybody's father was estranged in some way throughout all the other films leading up to it. So it's definitely a strong theme that's pretty hard to miss, I would think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will comment on one other thing, which is I don't want to have it go unmentioned that, yes, Scott, like, Barbossa's sacrifice, even though they painfully telegraphed it there at the end, this would be one of my favorite moments, but one of my favorite moments in the nuance that it still could have been done so much better. Like, I could have personally been weeping because Barbossa, yeah, again, is probably my favorite character as well. I think he makes a great pirate.
Jeffrey Rush has the perfect pirate laugh.
Yeah,
like, no one laughs like a pirate better than that man.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, his sacrifice could have been, I think, really epic, but it, I don't know, like you would expect, maybe, you know, I, from the fifth installment in a franchise, I'm asking too much for them to now start really making, like, character moments matter. So, but, you know, I wish it could have. Well, that said, I want to ask you guys one final question before we start wrapping up. And this, again, is more of a surface level question. For a movie, again, that's only really about eating popcorn and turning your brain off. I wanted to at least quote this too and give him some shout out. So the film Avenger did the review for this film over at Real World Theology. And one of my favorite lines is from the very beginning of his review. And he said, these films are a source of consternation. And I think that is such a great word to describe how I feel about these movies in general. Because, you know, it started off, like we've mentioned, with Curse of the Black Pearl. And I am 100% hooked. And I'm obviously going to see all the movies afterwards. And they kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And it was a source of consternation because I wanted them to be good. It's why someone can say, hey, it's not the worst movie in the world. And I'm like, yay, I'm going to go see this movie. that shouldn't be a thing. So have Ryan, have we mm-hmm. finally made enough of these movies?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Think we're done?
I certainly hope so. Just like Scott said, it's like, I wish we could do like a redo on this one, mm-hmm. but I don't want another one. It'll just dig the hole deeper.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in agreement. Scott, do you disagree?
Well, if you mean by saying we've had enough of these movies, if you mean Pirates of the Caribbean, then yes, I think we've told a grand enough story that span the lives of the main characters in the first three films. Just throw the fourth one out, like you don't need it. Yeah, I think we've told a good enough story. They're going to be remembered until Disney reboots it in 30, 40 years.
You think it'll take that long, huh?
I have a hope and a prayer, yes.
You need to join Ryan and I in the realist.
If you mean, have we had enough of these by adventurous pirate movies, then no. Like, I want more adventurous pirate movies. Mm-hmm. I hope they make mm-hmm. more of those. I hope they're creative. Like what, you know, the Black Pearl was, what that brought to the table, you know. I hope they're not, I guess, Cutthroat Island worthy. yeah, I mean, if you ask a lot of folks, like, what their favorite movie is, they'll say The Princess Bride. And The Princess Bride has, like, lots of, like, good pirate stuff in there, you know, swashbuckling and, you know, the Pirates of the Caribbean, too. You know, that's a favorite of a lot of people's, Black Pearl, at least. So I think there's room for more Pirates movies. I don't think there's more room in the Pirates of the Caribbean universe for any more of those.
Yeah, and I think, I don't remember which one of you mentioned it before, but especially if they try to launch, you know, because it almost is like they reset the universe. Like with this film,
right?
Everything's wrapping mm-hmm. up. So I would say that's especially true with whichever you guys pointed out, that especially if they try to reset it with Karina and Henry, that would
quick question here. Did either of you see the after credits scene?
Yeah,
I did not, because I assumed there
wasn't. Oh gosh, there is.
It makes me sad that it exists.
Yeah, it really shouldn't have been there. It really shouldn't have all. I guess to fill you in, Mikey, the scene is Will and Elizabeth are in bed together at night, and the shadow and sounds of Davy Jones come through the door, and it wakes Will up, and there's nothing there, and he goes back to sleep, and the camera pans down, and there are barnacles and, like, puddles on the ground. And then it cuts to black, insinuating that, you know, Davy Jones is there and everything. I really hope that that's just Will's PTSD, but, like, they cannot bring Davy Jones back. If they bring Davy Jones back, I probably will not see that movie. I don't care how much I love this stuff. Like,
you say that now.
Davy Jones is gone. He's gone. Like, it's, and now all the curses are broken. Like, they have nothing to go off of. Why did you bring Davy Jones back at the end? So I hope it's just Will's PTSD. That's in my head. That's what's happening. So.
Well, with, I mean, I'm trying to figure out how that would even work.
It doesn't.
Yeah,
it
really
well, doesn't. Something with the heart in the box and this,
the curse. That's what it was. And
the lady from New Orleans or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember what happened to her either.
Oh, they have that. There's that one witch in the movie.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. She was like the spirit of the sea or something that he was in love with, and that's why his heart was in a box.
Yep.
Oh, you mean from the second and third. Tia Dalma, Calypso. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Who knew it was her the whole time? I'm telling you, Scott, you're going to really enjoy this summation video.
All right.
You're going to be like, that's what happened?
It's like, terrible. It's like Pirates anime. Like, if a Japanese company got a hold of it and made, like, branching storylines. Like, if you ever try and watch an anime's just synopsis or a Japanese RPG, it's like, oh, I don't even know if you could storyboard that if you wanted to. It's just... It's just horrible.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it takes an excruciating amount, long amount of time, almost as much time as watching the movie to watch the summation, because there's so many things, and you're just like, why? Why? Like, I feel like, I know there's a lot of those kind of like almost whodunit, like Usual Suspects gotchas kind of towards the end of The Black Pearl, where it's like, okay, hey, I'm a step ahead. Hey, I'm two steps ahead. Hey, I'm three steps ahead. I know it does that kind of like and packs them in at the end of the first movie, but overall, that story is fairly simple. It's just told in a compelling way. And by trying to focus on the larger pirate universe, two to a lesser extent, but especially three and four, just make things unnecessarily complicated to be able to add more pirates and cool looking places. It's just so frustrating. But I will agree with this, 100%. I am all, obviously, based on things I've said already, I am all about them making more cool pirate stuff. I'm really into the pirate stuff. I think it's really cool. I think there's a lot of compelling stories to tell. It sets us up in a world that lends itself to great storytelling and very compelling characters. And with those two ingredients, you just mix in that soundtrack that you guys keep talking about, and you've got a great movie. And, you know, there's just so much there, which again is why I like Black Sails so much, because they basically created a whole bunch of really incredibly compelling characters, again, in a TV show that's definitely not for everybody. But I couldn't stop watching. And so I would definitely see more movies if they just did them right. But that's what we could say about almost anything, right? Actually, what they need to do is they need to take a lesson from Fast and Furious. They need to cast The Rock as a pirate, and the Rock will reinvigorate this franchise.
No.
There you go.
Yep. I would be first in line to see Pirates, six? The Rock rocks you, The Rock rocks the ship or something like that.
Yeah, all right. I'm with this. If they make John Cena a pirate as well, and they have a big ship battle on the seas, and then they like are grappling on the sails and everything, and doing the people's elbow off the top of I'm okay with that.
I mean, it's possible by the time they get around to six that Cena will be of level acting wise that he could do this. But I honestly think what they would do is they would basically just do Fast and Furious at Sea. So it'd be like Pirates 6 or Pirates of the Caribbean, Fast and Seafrius or something like that. And it would just be The Rock being a pirate, like facing off against Jason Statham, the pirate. And they would just be that game over and over again. And it'll kind of be funny and people will love it, and they'll shovel popcorn and it'll make, you know, $300 million. And people will be like, woo. And then they'll be like, well, this really isn't going where we want. So then they'll remake it again. And they'll make it about some kind of slave uprising in Jamaica, and then they turn into pirates, and it'll star Idris Elba, and it'll be like the most serious, darkest, most well-acted thing that you've ever seen in your entire life. And then I'll be first in line to see that one as well. So
Idris Elba as a pirate,
right?
That needs to happen,
right?
Oh my gosh!
Well, but to be fair, basically, if you just say Idris Elba as a blank. The following sentence should be, yes, that needs to happen. So, like I said, to be fair, that's kind of like, well.
Yeah. And my thing was, like, I had this sense of dread and a chill down my spine at the end when he's looking at the compass and he says, take me beyond that horizon, because I just got this flash in my mind of big, bold letters that said pirates in space. And then, like, they cross over Guardians of the Galaxy with pirates, because they all have to exist in the same universe. And so then Captain Jack is, like, in the Milano with him and, you know, just, like, stumbling around in the back of the ship. And I like
he's got a lightsaber now instead of a cutlass.
Well, I would
that's
say
true. There's swashbuckling in that, too. And that's probably why people like Star Wars, right?
Swashbuckling.
Yeah.
Well, so Scott, I believe it was you that earlier said like what you know, or maybe it was I can't remember. Someone said they basically did everything they can with the ship, you know, especially with the last one, the Ribcage. They have not had a Pirates movie where the ship flies. So what I'm hearing with Jack,
that's Peter Pan.
Yeah,
that's Captain Hook. You know, maybe that's something else. I don't know. They'll tie those together.
That's what
I'm saying. They could do that too.
They have Jack saying that obvious line about beyond the horizon. They've got some of that language in there already. Pirates of the Caribbean 6, Pirate Pan.
Ugh. Yeah, that's going to be the live-action Peter Pan movie. Mm-hmm. Jack Sparrow turns out to be Captain Hook.
And honestly, and
that's it. That's what it's leading up to.
And
that's
honestly, it can't be any worse than the actual Pan movie that came out a couple years ago.
And I've not seen it.
It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
I wanted that one to be good just because Hugh Jackman was in it.
Oh,
I was
me too.
Please be good. And then I heard the worst things about it, and that one I couldn't get myself to go watch.
I heard it was terrible, and I watched it, and I still couldn't believe it was as bad as it was.
Oh, that's too bad.
Like, I was sitting there watching it being like, I can't believe this movie got made. This is terrible. It's so bad. And, I mean, that's the closest thing to pirates. See, that's why everyone likes Hook the most. Because Hook is pirate-centered. Peter Pan.
And Robin Williams-centered.
So, what is it? Dustin Hoffman? Great pirate. Great pirate. A history of great pirates. I think we should have a top... If Josh still had time to do top fives, we would totally have done top five best pirates.
There you go.
Maybe if y'all are lucky, Maybe we'll do an episode of top five best pirates later. That's gonna be awesome. We've completely derailed, but that's fine. We are going to wrap up because we've gone about long enough, especially with our proposed sequels, which all sound amazing. You know, The Rock, Idris Elba, Pirate Pan, all amazing. But this is the point in the show where I want to give you guys a chance to specifically point out your criticisms, the things that while in the theater you watched it. Or you thought about the film later and said, come on, because something was awful, because something just made you scratch your head, or because it was so close to working, but it didn't, it just didn't come together. Whether it's thematic, technical, a character, anything like that. So, Ryan, what was it that made you say, come on, man?
There was a number of things, but the two that most got me was having a British naval officer adversary set up in the movie really at all, because they don't even meet hardly Jack, and then they get chomped by the other ship.
It was pretty inglorious.
Poor Faramir.
Huh? Yeah.
Poor Faramir.
Yeah. He's just good at dying. He's gonna be the next Sean Bean. That's gonna be his slot to fill. He'll just die for this movie and that movie. But that one like really got me. It's like, why even waste our time on that? Why not do something else better? Because Salazar was obviously the big bad. Like they completely showed us that's what this movie was about. It was about Salazar, and he was going to be the adversary, and he was supposed to be scary. And it's like, why split our attention at all?
Yeah. Mm. Well, isn't that what they did in the first film? It was Barbossa, and then it was whoever the British guy was.
Not Gillette. Yeah, but I remember him always talking to Gillette, but it was the other one. But he actually had a point to the story, right? Mm-hmm. He was being manipulated by Elizabeth and things like that. This guy had no connection to anybody other than I'm a naval officer and this is a pirates movie, so I'm here.
Yep.
And Norrington wanted to marry Elizabeth. Like, that was his motivation for going after him. So he had, like, a love triangle thing going on there, you know, and... Like, I really liked him in the first one.
And he even had his own character arc, right? Because at the end, he didn't chase Jack right away. Like, that was his thing, and then they used him in later movies, right? He became a drunk and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, he had a point in the first one, whereas in this one, it wasn't like a triangle of adversaries. It was like, I'm here, by the way, and then they just like literally smack him down underneath the water. It's like, we don't need you anymore. Go away.
I wish his flag would have said that. Like, they show his, like, someone looking through a spyglass to his ship. Scarfield. That's what we're calling him. That's the best. That's the best they could come up with. Scarfield. They look through a spyglass. They notice that the British ship is chasing them, and they know it's Scarfield because the flag says, "Hey guys, I'm here too."
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I don't think he even fired a shot in that thing. Like, it was just, oh, there's something, and that he was gone. Yeah. So that was my biggest. Yeah. That was one of my biggest ones. The second one was actually, unfortunately, Scott, I don't want to pour any water on a good touching moment for you, but it was Barbossa's death.
Oh.
Because the choreography was so lacking. Like, it didn't make sense how he got up there ahead of Karina, and the other two had gotten past, but she hadn't. And then, for whatever reason, he just decides to completely let go of the chain to just knock the other guy down, essentially, by stabbing him, I guess. Like, he hadn't grabbed Karina's ankle. He hadn't grabbed Barbossa's ankle. Like, it was like, I need to die now. I'll go. See you later. Like, it was completely unearned kind of a deal. And the fact that I didn't like Karina very much didn't help with that either. It's like, if you're going to sacrifice for somebody who's worth it. But that's, you know, my sinner side coming through. But the whole scene there, it's like, if they would have just had a choreographer who made it make sense, that would have been, yeah, where I could have gotten on board. But the whole time my mind was saying, this is stupid. They should have done it right. And so then I didn't get any of that emotional gravity that was supposed to be in the scene that you actually got to experience there.
Well, did it not feel, the whole Barbossa Karina thing just felt kind of tacked on towards the end, just so they could have that moment? Like, I felt like there could have been way more. It was just like a 10-second conversation between Barbossa and Jack. I don't know. It was, anyway.
Well, and everything,
they tied it in. Oh, go ahead.
And everything relational-wise felt tacked on at the end there. Like, she had showed no real feelings for him, it didn't seem like, until after he was dead. And then the two of them, Henry and Karina, get together, and that had no real basis other than, well, you've seen movies before. We're supposed to end up together. We're the same age. And then even Elizabeth and Will felt tacked on because they didn't speak. They didn't emote. They just walked slowly through the grass to each other because that's where their cues were. Like, that's their mark. Okay, we made our mark. Let's hug now. End
like
of film.
Yeah, I feel like we're doing a lot of great jokes to help out how it should have ended already. Like, I imagine them recreating this in like a cartoon kind of way, and doing like the spyglass, like seeing the flag, and then like trying to figure out, like, hey, you want to get married? Why would I do that? I'm showing no interest in you in the whole film. Haven't you seen any movies before? She's like, oh, good point. You know,
it's right here in the script, page 53. You see that part? Oh,
that'd be great if someone does like a Robin Hood Men in Tights, like, kind of callback joke. I could get shocked. He gets another shot.
But yeah, those were my biggest two things. Biggest commands there.
Mm-hmm. All right, Scott, same question. You know, what was it, or what were the couple things that really got you?
Yeah, well, I guess I'll have to disagree with the stuff about Barbossa, but I will agree on the choreography stuff. I guess regarding that could have been a lot better. I think the choreography could have been a bit better through the movie as a whole. But my two main ones, they're ages. Like, Henry is like late teens, early 20s tops, but nobody else has aged. You know, like Jack doesn't have gray hair. Mm-hmm. Gibbs still looks like Gibbs from the first movie. You know, he should be in like
he was born that old.
Or but yeah, and like, you know, Elizabeth has no wrinkles. You know, still looking as pristine as before. Just nobody aged except for Henry. So that was interesting.
The other thing, I guess, is that when they – I think we mentioned this before about the usage of Jack. Jack was really good in the first movie because he came off as being a blunder, but really he was always steps ahead. And in this one, they just – he was just comedic relief. I don't really remember him adding too much to, I guess, what was going on other than, you know, his regular crazy antics. But nothing really seemed planned from him. He was always trying to get out of it because he knew Salazar was coming after him. You know, he didn't even really want to – yeah, so that was kind of frustrating. I don't know. Just use it.
You can just keep going on.
But the one thing I like what they did with Jack though was that they had him trade in his compass for the bottle. And I thought, okay, cool. We're seeing Jack at his absolute lowest point that we've seen him before. But it didn't really seem to affect him for the rest of the movie. It's just like he was there and now he's out of it again and he's back on the seven seas, you know, like he always is. I was hoping for a bit more, I guess, rumination or like thinking about like where he was, you know. So I guess the stuff with Jack could have been better. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah,
because I have others, but I'll leave it at that.
I was gonna say that would require depth of character and time spent on whatever. So for me, the like we've all said, there are so many. Something that actually that was a singular moment was when I felt like the plot moved forward or things happened simply because someone said, hey, I've got a really cool idea that we should try to get into a Pirates movie sometime. This might be the last one. And so specifically that came up when they drug the undead sharks out for whatever reason. Like, I imagine someone thinking that was going to be way cooler than it was. And maybe it was to people other than me. And the same thing with when it seemed like suddenly, for plot reasons, that Salazar could inhabit the soul of a human. You would think,
oh gosh, yeah.
If that was a thing that they could do, that they knew they could do the whole time, shouldn't they like have like a cage of humans like on board that they just do that to? Like, wouldn't it be more like, wouldn't the stakes be a lot higher if they had been using people the entire movie like that?
Yes.
And yes. Like sneaking around and like people didn't know who they were. And then like those people died afterwards. So like when like Henry gets taken over, we go, oh my gosh, now they've gotten someone we kind of sort of, but not really because it's the fifth installment, care about. Like he's inhabited. What's going to happen to him now? And there were stakes to that.
I like that.
But yeah. there weren't. So, and something that we have not talked about, but I want to make sure that we talk about, and I want to talk about it in a very careful way, is I don't think any of us really cared for Karina. And as, again, carefully as I can put this, because I realize we are three white dudes talking about we didn't like the woman that was supposed to be the strong, independent woman of a film. I realize the weight that that opinion carries. But my argument would be that we just had a podcast about Wonder Woman, a very strong woman of agency in a film. And the thing that made her so great, well, there are tons of things. You should listen to the Wonder Woman episode. There's tons of things that make Wonder Woman great. One of the things that made her so great was that in her strength, she never used her strength to put people down. And it's the same criticism I would have about male characters, that when you use your strength for bullying, and I know it's probably frustrating to be an enlightened woman in this time, being an astronomer and having people think it has something to do with donkeys and like all that, like all those jokes that didn't seem to quite work. But she just came across as kind of mean, like, it, to the point where, like it's already been pointed out, it seems kind of odd that her and Henry were getting together in the end, because they're like, she was just ice cold. And let her be ice cold, but don't, like, let's not pretend that, like, there's some warmth there. Like, if she's just going to be, like, a mean, cynical person, okay. But I think they wanted us to think that she was strong, independent. And I don't think the script did her any favors, when I think that that character could have been really, really great. So that kind of was unfortunate and probably was sitting at the forefront of my mind, again, because I did just see Wonder Woman, and we did just talk about Wonder Woman for almost 2 hours, about all the things they did to make her fully encompass everything great about femininity. C-eminimities, whatever. So that was a big thing. And my final thing that really bothered me is that, Ryan, I believe it was you that was talking about the humor in the first one. Like every joke in the Curse of the Black Pearl was great, because it would be set up. Or the setup would be great because you never see the joke coming. And I sadly think that the majority of the jokes in this movie, either if they weren't just like kind of off-putting or crude, much like Captain Salazar's crew, the jokes didn't land. Boom. That's funny. So obviously my sense of humor is so terrible that I wasn't connecting with the jokes in DMNT or DMTNT. So I just wanted to be funnier. Like, I wasn't laughing when Jack was being wacky or when they had one-liners. And or like I said, they had that entire thing that just seemed to be drug out forever with the donkey joke and the whore thing. And I was just like, it's just not funny. Okay.
I would agree with that.
So
maybe that's where they were expecting us to side with her, is just by putting other bullies around her. So that way we would side with her. But
it's like being mad at children, you know?
Yeah. But like you said, you know, we're a few white guys, but my wife was the first one to say she did not like that character at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't even say it first when we came out of the movie theater. She was the first one to say, yeah, that was just a bad character. She didn't like her at all.
Yeah. Well, and that's the difference. I think when you set up someone like that who's going to fight back and stand her ground, she needs to do that against legit bullies. In this film, all the bullies or the other pirates are actually presented as fools. Mm-hmm. And so being mean to, like, someone who is, like, mentally your inferior just makes you the bully. Even if they have some amount of power.
I'm just gonna throw this out there. Maybe you guys will buy it. I don't think you will, but this is kind of, I guess, after the movie, how I could take her character more. I didn't actually care for her too much, regardless, but she was Barbossa's daughter, and we see Barbossa being very condescending and bullying to his crew as well. Like in the first movie, when they first do the ritual and everything, and one of the guys is like, did it work? I don't feel any different. And he just shoots him, right? So like he doesn't think much of his crew either. So I guess with that in mind, like, if she's really Barbossa's daughter, I could buy that a bit more, because those were Barbossa's characteristics, at least at the start, you know, before he had the whole change of heart in the last two movies. So maybe you guys will buy that. I don't know. It's how I could survive, I guess, without hating her.
So the only thing that I can say back to that doesn't kind of make me think, maybe I am just justifying it because she's not how I would like a female portrayed, is the fact that she never embraces the pirate life.
Okay.
If she were to embrace the pirate life, if she were to say, oh, like, I'm really a pirate. Like, I'm, like, not just like, oh, you know, he jumped off an anchor and saved my life. Maybe. if she was like, I've got piracy in my blood, and she goes on to be, like Elizabeth does. You know, like, she's like, I'm picking up this mantle. I'm becoming something greater. I'm becoming this thing.
Yeah.
Then But she doesn't. She's just like, nope, I'm still kind of like a scientist. Like, okay, I attribute most of Barbossa's things to, like, this is what you do as a pirate, not what you do as a human being, like, as a man or a woman. Just, this is what pirates do. You shoot people randomly, and you treat people like dirt, because that's how you become, you stay in power. I see it as different. I don't know why. And I want to really think about it. So that's why, like I said, that's why I caveat that whole, her whole character, because I'm really sure, not sure how I feel or why I feel about it the way I do. I've tried to articulate it. I hope it makes sense. I think
I can see where you're coming from.
I think it did, I think her character didn't sit well with any of us, but then again, like I didn't see it with my wife this time. She didn't get a chance to come to this movie, so I didn't get a chance to ask her, but apparently Ryan's wife was also bothered by it. We need to put a poll. Once this goes up, I'll put a poll on
the discussion. There you go.
Yeah, my wife hasn't seen it either, but I am very interested to hear what she has to say about Karina. So, yeah.
Okay, so to end, we transition to hopefully being a little more positive. So, Scott, what was your favorite part of the movie, if you haven't already said it? And if you have, just remember.
Barbossa's sacrifice, I guess. like, I'll just be the polar opposite of the other guests on the show, right? So, yeah, I just really like that. I was maybe it just hit all the right notes for me. Just seeing how the story had progressed up to that point. I knew it was coming as soon as, you know, he saw that book and everything. I was like, oh gosh, she's a daughter, you know? And I was, you know, I knew it was coming. I knew it was, he was going to be bowing out in this. I just had a feeling, but I thought they did it pretty well. Choreography aside, you know, logic aside, like I guess I put aside, suspended disbelief to appreciate that more than others, maybe at least one other person, right? But yeah, that was probably my favorite part.
No, I mean, I think you've talked about it enough. I'm on the same page. And I think even Ryan has caveated it, you know, like, you know, if it could have been done this way, like it was a great gesture.
Yeah, it was good narratively and it made sense in the story and everything. But like I said, just those hangups were so glaring to me that it just, like I said, splashed cold water on what you experienced. That was just too much for me. It was just too much in my face. Yeah. Those errors. But yeah, it was definitely what it was supposed to be, like narrative wise and, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay, so Ryan, what was your favorite thing about the film?
I think mine probably isn't going to be as popular of an opinion, but I liked Salazar. I thought he was a great villain for this series at this time. Someone who was holding on to revenge, and that was the only thing keeping him going, and he was just like this dog at the end of a leash, ready to just get out there and rip into his target as soon as he could. I think I liked his look and his demeanor better in the flashback than I actually did in his special effects moments. But overall, I think that's Javier Bardem. I think he did a good job. He had that big thick neck and broad chest and everything. Like, he looked like an imposing captain that was going to get it done, what he set out to do. And that just made that other British naval officer seem so less necessary. Like, it just put in contrast another problem, which is what happened with most of the movie. It's like, that was a great narrative point. I just wish it was executed well. Oh, that was a really good villain, but he made this other thing look even less necessary than before. And that's where the like you consternation, the like, I want this to be good. It, same thing that happened with The Matrix, right? Great start, and then you get 2 and 3, and you're like, but I want it to be like the first one. Yeah. I want it to be right. And you could have done it, but you chose not to.
Well, so I would say it's not as egregious as a come on moment for me, but I like the idea of Bardem playing Salazar more than I like the execution of it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, broken record, same reason as everything else in this film. I wanted more.
Yeah.
You know, like I wanted him to have more of a character arc. I wanted him to have more depth, more power. I wanted us to empathize with him at least at one point, which we never, I mean, much like I said, I think that's the thing. Like at some point the story is told in the first Pirates movie where even with Barbossa and their crew, or at least they put people on the crew that you kind of sympathize with. Same thing with the British officers in the first one. Like you sympathize with everyone in that movie to some degree. So everyone has stakes. Everyone has a place at the table. So it matters what happens to them by the end of the film. In this one, you know, like most of the sequels, Salazar is basically throwaway. Like,
yeah.
And like I said, but gosh, he looks the part.
He looks the part, and he has that presence. Mm-hmm. It's just like that could have been a character to take you through 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah,
like well, he could have totally done that.
Yeah, but that's the thing with maybe the Disney problem. Everyone calls it the Marvel problem or the superhero problem. Generally, it's the throwaway villains. Like you could have put almost anyone in this role, no matter how good they were, and it would have been one of those things where I would have probably wanted more because they wouldn't have done enough with it. So
yeah.
Well, I wasn't going in expecting Anton Chigurh, but I mean I do know how well this guy can play a bad guy. And while I do think Salazar, the character of Salazar, was good enough for this, I think he could have been a lot better, especially seeing all like the Barbossa in the first movie, or Davy Jones in the second. They could have done a lot more with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. The best villains are the ones who you can kind of see the world from their point of view, or if you can, that like they don't seem like they don't think they're bad guys, like. Salazar was like, I'm the bad guy, just so y'all know.
they telegraphed everything in there, but you said to pick the best out of this movie, and so...
That was your best.
Well, was the best I could come up with.
Well, I feel like I'm in a similar situation, because, I didn't hate this film. I know we've kind of, like, poked fun at it. We've kind of tore it down a little bit, but I didn't hate it. Part of that was because I went in, like, if anyone follows me on Facebook, I went in, was like, you know, expectations low. Real low. And they were pretty low, and you know, I was able to enjoy most of the film. And I think one of the things that, and probably my favorite moment was surprisingly that scene, not while Jack is outsmarting Salazar, because that just made me not like Jack as much for some reason, but like once the crew came up and started offering him a tribute and we saw how he got all his, what I'll call bling,
That was cool.
I thought that was one of those things that someone added so much to the entire Pirates of the Caribbean kind of universe or, you know, series. I think that moment tells us so much about Jack and makes every part of Pirates better because of that scene. Yep. And if I could have gotten a movie full of those kind of moments that carried weight into all tons of other films, then it'd been great. But that was one of the only ones that I really thought kind of stuck. Okay, so the last thing I'll ask you guys, and you may have something, you may not, is just like a final thought. I know we've kind of covered a lot of ground. We've talked a lot about early Pirates films, the skipped over a lot of the middle stuff, and being able to kind of dance around in this new one while offering some spoilery thoughts. But Ryan, is there anything else that you want to leave people with before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I think we hit it all. I mean, just to reiterate how great the script and the writing was on that first movie. My favorite line in there was, and then me their chief. Like, just that line as she's fallen into the water, just, like, that epitomizes Curse of the Black Pearl to me. Just, like, even just a snippet of a conversation was just, like, amazing to me in that movie. Like, it's just so nostalgic.
It's hard to hit again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Scott, you have anything else that you want to leave people with or that we didn't get a chance to hit on?
Two quick things. One, I think making Johnny Depp look younger in this one, I think that's the best Disney has done with something like that. It was miles ahead of what Rogue One was, so props to Disney on that. It still wasn't perfect, but you know they're getting close with that whole de-aging of actors. Mm-hmm. I guess the last thing I'll leave people with is, I know we've talked a lot about what didn't work in this movie, but man, this movie was fun. Like I went in hoping for a fun movie. I didn't have any high hopes for it. And I walked out just in the complete opposite mindset of how I went in. Just that I was not expecting a fifth movie of a franchise to be that fun. So I would tell people, if you like the Pirates movies, you know, I don't know how much longer it has left in theaters. There's a lot of stuff coming up, but go see it. Like, it's a fun time.
Yeah. And like I said, if it weren't for so many things coming to theater, I would probably say the exact same thing. But I realize that everyone's probably not like a lot of us where we're seeing like two or three movies a month during this time of year. So if you could see just one movie, probably go see Wonder Woman. If you could see two movies, depending on what you like, you might want to see It Comes at Night. If you could see three. for my final thoughts, like I want to say that, you know, I did enjoy the movie. I had low expectations. And I think one of the only things that really weighs on me is I'm a little bit conflicted because I like the fact that this film, like at the end of it, I feel like they tied everything up. They erased all the curses, which kind of makes you sad when you think about the stakes of any of the other movies. You know, it gives Barbossa a last kind of hurrah. Jack gets the pearl back. Elizabeth and Will, you know, share their moment. Like all these storylines from all the going all the way back to the first movie, kind of get resolved.
Yep.
And it's a nice feeling, but at the same time, there are so many things going on in this film, you know, unneeded characters with, you know, the British guy, Salazar, no one getting enough time, not really needing to throw like Will and Elizabeth back into this film, except to get people at the box office. Like, I feel that the best, like, so that's why I'm conflicted. The best, one of the best things is that it ties everything up, but also one of the things that I think makes the movie like really weighs down the film and makes it kind of tedious at times is the fact that it looks like they have a need to wrap everything up. So I'm living in this land of constant conflict, and I don't know how that makes me feel. Like, is it better to have the wrap up, or would it have been better to just focus on completely new people and give everyone in that story a little bit more time? If you like the other Pirates movies, just go see this, and you'll probably be at least moderately happy. You probably like what you said at the beginning, Ryan, or towards the beginning of the episode. You probably won't be mad that you spent money. Like, you won't regret your decision. So, with that, I've really enjoyed talking to you guys about this movie, especially since it's always fun talking about a movie that's only mediocre. Because it's interesting to see kind of like where the conversation is going to go, because we're not just sitting here gushing about every great thing. I've really enjoyed this, Ryan. It's been really great to have you on for the first time. Scott, always great to have you back. And I want to make sure that people can find what you guys do around the web or in any other arena that you guys want. So, Ryan, what is it you do, and how can people connect with you and follow your work?
Well, I'm half of the group that's working on Redeeming Culture. You can find us at redeemingculture.com. We've got Twitter, we've got Facebook, and on the site you can find David Atwell and my Twitter handles as well. And you can usually keep up on the podcast on the site if you go through SoundCloud or iTunes or something like that. You can find our 3D podcast on those as well, where we typically talk about movies on the podcast. We'll talk about anything in the articles that we put on the website there.
Nice. And Scott, same question, man. How can people follow what you're doing?
Sure, yeah. Well, I'm in the Real World Theology group a whole ton. I'm on Letterboxd as well. That's where I write, I guess, the bulk of my shorter reviews is on Letterboxd, but the more full-length ones, I go to Real World Theology for that. I write for the site. I'm still working on a podcast of my own, but I've been having a really fun time being a father, so that whenever I have free time, I've been working on that. So maybe by the next time I'm on a podcast with you guys, I'll be able to talk about that a little bit. I'm just in the Real World Theology group primarily. I love you guys, so thanks for having me on again.
Oh man, it's always great. And it sounds like whatever you end up doing or spending your time with is win-win. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure that I have all the ways to get a hold of these guys in the show notes that you can find at realworldtheology.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Physification. If you'd like to support the show, which I would love for you to do, and all the writers, and staff over at Real World Theology would love for you to do, you can do so by going to realworldtheology.com/support. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your podcast app of choice. If you do so, please leave us a review. All reviews are way more helpful than I can ever express in words. So if you have done that, thank you so much. You're helping the show in a very tangible way. In the meantime, for Real World Theology, I'm Fizz, reminding you that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
See ya.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!
Well, I think that's probably your issue. See, if you would have, instead of using Cortana, you would have used Karina, it would have not only been smart and helpful, but it would have also been incredibly mean and condescending.
Yes, exactly.